bringing you episode 66 of the top 10 rated podcasts created for authors by authors. Write your best book. This week, we're tackling kind of a sticky topic, and it's all about creating coherent timelines for our stories. One of the most overlooked yet crucial elements of a well-written story is a fluid and easy-to-follow timeline. Without it, readers can become confused, disoriented, and even frustrated, and they'll wind up setting the book aside, something we all want to avoid at all costs. So why is it that no one hardly talks about timelines nearly as much as they talk about characters and setting and plots? Well, I think it's because we take timelines for granted, and or we assume that however the story unfolds for us is how it should be told. Not at all true, guys. As with any other aspect of your story, you absolutely must put thought and consideration into your timeline. It cannot be taken for granted that the reader will naturally follow along with the way we tell a story just because it makes sense to us or it feels like the way that it should be told. Okay, then, how can we handle timelines in a way that keeps the reader engaged and follow along closely to the story as it unfolds? First, we have to decide the basic time frame in which we want to tell our story. Does it make more sense for our story to, you know, stretch over a longer period of time from weeks to months to even years? Or is a more compressed timeline better, where everything from beginning to end happens in the span of a few weeks, a few days, or even just 24 hours? So you have to decide that first. Then we also must consider how to handle it if we're showcasing more than one character's point of view. How can we tell the same story through the eyes of two or more characters and keep the timeline moving forward without confusing the reader? The answer here is twofold. First, when writing the story, make sure to always move the timeline forward chronologically in the order things happen, and do not go back and forth and rehash what happened in one character's scene through the eyes of the second character all over again. While yes, you're seeing it from a new perspective, the reader does not want nor need to see the same scene play out two times in a row. Instead, each character's scene should pick up where the last left off, only where things pick up from their point of view. This will avoid confusion for the reader and propel the story forward, which we always want to do, of course. Now, the second most crucial part of this is actually comes before the writing stage. If you're writing a story with dueling timelines told from more than one character's perspective, it would save you so much time, trouble, and energy and confusion for the reader if you would take just a few minutes of time and create a simple chapter outline. Now, I'm not talking about pantsers. I'm not talking about a full-on scene-by-scene plot, like outline. I do this with a super secret spreadsheet that I created for me and my clients, but here's what I will tell you. You need just three columns, one for the chapter number, one for the POV of that chapter, and one for a brief one sentence that summarizes what happens in that chapter. That's it. I'm telling you, it will make a world of difference. It'll help you keep your timeline straight and even avoid writer's block. I'll finish this episode by also giving you my thoughts on flashbacks, because as you're about to hear in the upcoming interview with our guest, with the amazing Sonali Dev, author of these great books based in Bollywood, we didn't quite see eye to eye on the flashback issue. But, you know, I wanted to give her a chance to give her opinions and not butt in with my own too much. You know, that's hard for me. So I'll give you my thoughts at the end, and then you can decide what works best for you. So without further delay, here is my discussion with author Sonali Dev. Okay, guys, welcome back to the show. We're here on Write Your Best Book, the podcast, episode 66. And our guest host today, as promised, is Sonali Dev. And she is an amazing author. I've just met her recently, and I'm pleased to have this conversation with her on timelines. So first, Sonali, thank you so much for joining us for the show today.
I am so excited to be here. Thank you for having me. And hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in.
Sure. Well, we're really excited. And she has saved my rear end. We needed a last minute fill on the spot, and she just came right in without question. And I'm really, really happy about it. So thanks
happy
for doing
help.
This.
Happy to help.
Okay, so let's start with telling my listeners a bit more about you, your books, and your journey from when you first started writing to where you are today.
All right, so first, my seventh book, I have to calculate that in my head a little, my seventh book comes out in July. So I have six novels and a novella out. And so I am Sonali Dev, and I write something between contemporary romance and women's fiction. So they are, if you will, Bollywood films in a book. They are classic family sagas and journeys of women's growth. You know, they're not really issue based, but, you know, they're a mix of kind of over the top, filterless, boundaryless families, which can be humorous, but they also do, you know, are set in a world where real problems happen. And so they do, you know, address that, not look away from that. So that's kind of what I write. And what else was the question?
Whatever you want to know about your journey, anything.
I am. So my first book was, my debut was called A Bollywood Affair, and it was very much a classic Bollywood style rom-com, you know, and this was back in 2014 when we weren't in the middle of this wonderful rom-com wave. So it, you know, it was kind of pre-wave, but it is very much an over-the-top old style Bollywood, you know, stylistically, big feelings, you know, funny, huge emotions kind of book. And my first four are, you know, I mean, they're not really a series, but they get called the Bollywood books because, there are series in that one of the two protagonists works in Bollywood, and Bollywood is, for those who don't know, the Indian film industry set in Bombay. So it's kind of a play, which not everyone appreciates, between Bombay and Hollywood. So that's where that term comes from. And so one of the protagonists in all four of those books is somehow, you know, either works in Bollywood or is related to Bollywood. So those four were Bollywood series. I started with Kensington Publishing with those. And then my new books are set in San Francisco in a politically ambitious Indian-American family. So the Indian Kennedys, if you will, or the Indian-American Kennedys. And they are, it's going to be a series of four novels. Two are out, one comes out this July, and then one comes out in 2022. And they're my four favorite Jane Austen novels spun. So I don't like to call them retellings because they're not scene by scene, character by character retellings, but they're thematic retellings. So they're inspired by my four favorite Jane Austen novels. The first one is called Pride, Prejudice, and Other Flavors. No points for guessing which one that is a play on. The second one is called Recipe for Persuasion. And that's a two-generational persuasion where the same kind of thing happens to both mother and daughter. So today we're going to talk about timelines, and these are kind of generational sagas. So there's a lot of the timeline thing going on with all of these books. And then the one that comes out in July is called Incense and Sensibility. So that is, and there is a little bit of political, not a whole lot, but a little bit of political drama to all of this, because the series kicks off when the oldest son in this family announces his bid for California governor, and then it ends with the election. So it's set during this gubernatorial race.
That's really interesting. I've literally been sitting here on the edge of my seat thinking, I've never heard of anything like this. This is great.
It is like nothing you have read before.
I would think not. Okay, well, I'm excited to learn more from you. So the, as you said, this week we're going to talk about writing and maintaining a cohesive and easy to follow timeline in fiction. So is this something that you ever struggled with in your own writing career, like in the beginning maybe? And if so, what was it about timelines that you struggled with? Or if not, because some people don't, how did you learn to nail these timelines from the beginning?
So in some ways I am not the right person to be doing this. And in some ways I am, perfectly right, which is pretty much all of life, yeah. But I guess. I think the thing for me, because I do write a lot of backstory. So I have, and I write a lot of generational interconnection. So any character of mine, when you're at the end of the book, you know what their grandparents were like, you know, so you kind of have this very deeply set within the family unit story and this very deeply set within the family unit characters. And for that, you kind of have to get an insight into the character's childhood. You have to get an insider look, not just at that character's childhood, but the personalities of the parents and where they're coming from. And of course, since I write so many Indian and Indian American characters, there is the whole immigration thing, and what that brings with it is, you know, who was this family before the immigration happened and what that experience was like, and what is this new replanted life like. And so there is a lot of timeline, timeline specific story going on, because the current story is very influenced by past story. Mm-hmm. So just inherently, that's my books. So I have to know even when, so when a story comes to me, like when The Rajes, which is the Jane Austen series, The Rajes is the politically ambitious family I was talking yeah. about. Now, when that story comes to me, the basis of it is that this is a family that is descended from royalty. So India has this history of of kingdoms and of before the British came. And so it has, and before the British colonized India, the Mughals came down. And so there is this history of, of these kingdoms fighting for their place within India. And then by the time the, it becomes a colony, they are in this situation where the British put them in the roles of these figureheads. And so they get to keep, they kind of, quote unquote, get to keep their titles. Because, naturally now this country is captured by the British Empire. So they have no real power, but they get to keep their, properties, their palaces, they get to keep their titles, but they essentially become tax collectors, or they become, arms of the British, if that, they become these puppets. And then this is a 200-year history, and then freedom happens. And a lot of these, these princely states, as they're then called, find ways to get into the democratic power dynamic. So they run for elections because they have a lot of local clout and things like that. So there is this deep, rich history, which is also really a strange history of power lost and, regained and a lot of media attention, all the things that go with being royals in today's world, because very few royalty actually has any real purpose. Mm. And so there's all this history. And so this family, when I start thinking about their story today, I really start thinking about it from the time of their ancestors and how, from the time of how the British came, took their land, how the revolutionaries, what has happened over time, and then post. So it's the story of these three brothers, which really on the page is all in the background. is all in the background. Mm-hmm. It's these three princes, these three, royal brothers, and they have their own, own characters, and they're the quintessential oldest brother, who is the crown prince, who is the carrier of the, the family's legacy. He is one of the youngest members of parliament in India. He is said to be one of the most powerful politicians there. And there is this whole story of his, and unfortunately he dies in an air crash. And the middle brother, who has, who's scientific and all of that, and is a doctor and migrates to America to start his own life because he doesn't really see himself too much, as part of that legacy. And then the youngest brother is your quintessential spoiled prince, who is in the media for all the wrong reasons all the time, makes all the wrong decisions. He's the caricature of, current royalty. It's the story of these three brothers. It's actually on paper the story of the children of these three.
Okay.
But I have, you know, but all of this shows up in the stories because who these children are has so much to do with this whole legacy. So inherently, that is part of it. And so I have to know really well. And it's, you know what the iceberg theory is, right? So as writers, we have to know, you know, 95% of icebergs are under the water and 5%. Just a teeny tiny little, you know, 1% shows up. And which is why when a ship runs into it, you're basically, you know, running into a mountain. But as authors, we have to, our knowledge has to be the entire iceberg. What the reader sees is the tip, right? Is the part that is visible. And so that is all of this information that is legacy information that feeds the story. And so A is just knowing really, really well what that is, because that's where my story comes from. That's where, you know, a lot of the conflicts come from. So inherently having this information in my head on paper where it is needed, you know, is just part of my process. And then as far as actually, I think the big conversation here when you're talking about timelines is the more important thing is the dissemination. And that's where really good craft, I think, comes in. So, and I know we'll talk a lot more about flashbacks and how you leak the story to the reader. But that is the true, that is the true test of a storyteller, is how much information you're giving when, you know, how much of that iceberg you're making visible and when you're doing it. And so that is the real trick. But before we go on to your next question, I think the thing that I will say is, you know, when you're thinking in terms of these big stories or even a small story, which is fed by history, because every story is fed by history, because okay, we are who, you know, where we come from, even in terms of just our childhoods, if there is nothing more, you know, that is behind that. But I think the thing to know is that you don't have to have it all laid out exactly so, right? The first thing is to sit down and write the story. And then as you come up, you know, against things you need to know, you can figure those things out also. So it's not like I have, you know, I'm not a neat charts and graphs sort of writer at all. I'm a mess. So, you know, my outline is essentially, you know, I use a very sharp pencil. That's my thing. But they're bubbles that literally have, you know, things scribbled in them. And sometimes the things are as general as he breaks her heart or she does something really bad. You know, it's literally, so that's my, I have a bunch of bubbles that then I keep on filling in. So you don't have to have all of the timeline down. So your first draft is essentially, my first draft is essentially a brain dump. And then my second draft or my revisions are about storytelling. How do I take the story I've vomited out? And then how do I make it a story that is fun, engaging, and, you know, has this huge forward movement in my telling? So it's how much information I'm giving you and how curious I'm making you at every step. That's really where, and then the final step is actually cleaning the timeline out, which is a huge, you know, which I hope we get to talk about, because that's always really funny. And that's kind of almost like a, you know, pre-copy edit, copy edit thing for me when my copy editor is going, oh, you just said he did this yesterday, but it seems like it's been, you know, 72 hours. And so at that point, and then we'll come back to this question, because I also have written, you know, I've written books which are overtly, so A Distant Heart is a book that is actually written in two timelines. So it's chapter one, Kimi, current, present day. Chapter two, Rahul, present day. Chapter three, Kimi, a long time ago. Chapter four, Rahul, a long time ago. And then again, we come back to present day, a long time ago, a long time ago. And that kind of is, so that is very, you know, it's an alive timeline story. And then the one that comes out in July in Sense and Sensibility is the timeline is important because it is a compressed timeline story. So it is set between, you know, it the story kicks off when there is an assassination attempt at a rally during a campaign. And so there's a ticking clock with 3 months to go before the election. So the story happens within that. And then every day becomes important. And so for that, then that timeline is at a very micro level. So those are two, you know, completely different things, and I hope we'll get to talk about them.
Yeah, we'll see what we can get in here. Okay, so you mentioned briefly that we're going to talk about flashbacks. Let's go ahead and just kind of dive into that so that we get all the good stuff in. I personally don't care for them myself because, I think it's because so many new writers don't know how to pull them off effectively. But I know that a lot of writers and even readers do like using them. What's your view on whether we should use flashbacks? And if so, what's your thoughts on that?
So I'm one of those people who believes that this whole bad name that backstory has gotten is complete nonsense. I mean, there is no story without backstory. The problem is not that there is backstory on the page. The problem, again, is dissemination. And so it is craft and storytelling. And I personally, like, if I go back and look at every book I have loved, and when I say loved, it means that you can ask me 10 years, you know, from having read that book about the book, and I remember the characters' names, I remember what they did, I remember it's that memorability. You know, there are books you really love when you're reading and they're done, when you're done and you move on to the next one. And, you know, those are great books too, and they have their place. But then there are the books which kind of become part of your soul and you live with them forever and ever and ever. And with those books, you cannot find me a book that I love like that that does not have a flashback in it, that does not have a flashback you remember. So every memorable book, if you throw out a name of a book that I will remember, I will be able to identify, you know, because you cannot engage with a character whose past you do not know intimately, right? So childhood is a hugely powerful fuel for story. And I'm not saying all flashbacks are childhood, but anything that is important today because of who a character is yesterday or 10 years ago, because of what the world was, because of an incident that happened. So which is the difference between characters in a vacuum and characters that feel like real human beings? And so I think, and it does not have to be pages and pages long, right? Every story calls for something different. A paragraph, right? I mean, and think of the last book. You said you don't enjoy flashbacks, but I'm almost going to challenge you to think of the last book in which you felt like the characters were absolutely real people. You dreamt of them at night, like they meant something to you.
Oh, I'm going to.
Exactly. So if you pick any one of those books and you close your eyes and you think about that book and why that character means so much to you, I will guarantee you that you're able to identify something in their past that is in that book, something that happened to them as a child.
I think there's a major difference between backstory and flashback. I totally 100% agree that we need backstory. That's
yes. Yeah. So now flashback is a very, I think it's an extremely potent tool, right? It is a story with a lot of, I mean, it's a tool for a writer with a lot of power, but you know, with great power comes great responsibility, etc. And so if your book is half flashbacks, well, that again is a format. So whatever you're doing is you're making a deal. However you choose to do this, you're making a deal with your reader. Right. So when you start out, you're telling a reader, I'm making you a promise that I'm going to give you this, right? I'm going to give you emotional satisfaction. I'm going to give you clear understanding. I'm giving you all of that. And then in terms of storytelling, you give them a rhythm, right? So people will have, and that's where, you know, here is a book. In my first paragraph, I know she's speaking in first person. She's speaking in first person present. You know, I'm going to be in her head. And by the second chapter, I know if I'm going to be in more than one head, if I'm going to be just in one head. So you're making right at the beginning of the book, you're making these deals with the reader. So the reader is now rooted and in your hands, right? And so so it is, of course, your job to. So then there is a format. If I'm setting up a rhythm for you, like I said, in A Distant Heart, where I am saying, you know, at the start of if you read under chapter one, you know, Kimmy, a long time ago, You know, I'm telling you, when I'm telling you that, there's going to be something else in the next chapter. And what is that? So by chapter four, you know, this rhythm is going to now repeat. And so I'm setting up this deal, which then you're expecting. Now the next chapter is going to be from behind, you know, a flashback chapter, if you want to even call it that. But they're both story, right? In this case. So that is specific to this case. There are other stories where you, and you've read these books, everybody's read these books, where you know something is coming. Like your whole journey into that book is, there is something that has happened. Every choice, every word that's written here, something has happened. And you have that hunger to know what that thing is. And if you set that hunger up, again, you're making a promise that I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you in a very emotionally satisfying way what happened. And so that is your classic flashback setup, right? And so I think flashbacks, you have to remember that you cannot be frivolous with flashbacks in today's, you know, in for today's reader, I think. So it has to be incredibly emotionally satisfying. So flashbacks are about emotion and being ever, you know, evocative about an experience that this character has had. And it cannot be in a vacuum. It has to feed into current story. So whatever today's conflict is, whatever I am following these characters through this book for, has to be very deeply related to this flashback. And so there are, you know, so when you put a flashback in those, you know, don't do it if, don't do it if it's not going to make them weep, you know, or laugh out loud. Right? Don't do it if it's not going to explain something you've been hanging as a carrot in front of them for a very long time. Right? So things like that, you know, don't do it if you have that set down, then a flashback is one of the most powerful tools, I think, that you have, you know, in your hands. Now, I wrote a book called The Bollywood Bride. And again, it's a, you know, it's a second chance at first love story. So it's the story of this girl who has had a very traumatic childhood, and because of her family situation, her father sends her from India to America to spend summers with her aunt. So this is a child who has lived in two worlds, you know, through her childhood. So she spends her you know, school year in her boarding school, and then she spent in India, and she spends her summers with her aunt here in America, and that's the only little bubble of normal that she knows. And so this is, so her childhood is very important to the story. And well, in, during those summers, she falls in love with, you know, her uncle's nephew, who also kind of is in this home. And there are these kids who are, you know, who have these wonderful childhood summers. And so by the time she is, they're 17, 18, they're very much in love. And, you know, they're absolutely soulmates. And for whatever reason, they're torn asunder. And she dumps him. His life is ruined, blah, blah, blah. And 10 years later, they meet at their cousin's wedding. So it is a reunion story. So again, where their past connection becomes incredibly important to why they're both so angry, so bereft today in our story. So this was a story again. So flashbacks are the larger, you know, when I think when it goes over a cup, a pair, and again, keeping flash, if you trim it down as much as you possibly can.
Yeah, I'd agree down, with right? that.
So that's a that's the grand flashback, but a lot of backstory can be delivered in, you know, as tags. So as part of the narrative, and weaving it into the narrative is a very good way also to deliver flashback and backstory. But the reason I brought the Bollywood Bride up is the book was done. My editor was really happy with it. We were good to go. All of the beta readers were happy with it. I was happy with it. But I was like, something with this beginning is missing. Like something. Because she was also character. You know, when you're talking about flashbacks, that's another thing that really helps with unsympathetic characters. Because if you're writing a difficult to like character, which you only write because there is good reason, right? Because we only want to follow characters who there is a reason to follow. So when they are either terribly sad or really angry, like the difficult to like characters, people who make bad choices, it only makes sense to us if we know why, right? Which is why they're, and so in that case, I think for very, very asympathetic characters, flashback is absolutely a fabulous tool because give me one paragraph that shows me a horrible thing that happened to them in their childhood that made them who they are today. And boom, you have me by, you know, by the throat. I will now follow, and I'm no longer angry because of the stupid things they do, because they completely, because everyone understands childhood pain. It is completely universal. And so in that case, flashback is a great tool. You just need, you know, one slap across the face from a parent or a, you know, person in authority, and you will literally root for this person to find healing and happiness, right? This is just who we are.
I like that.
And so one of the things that happened was there was Andrea is a very unsympathetic character because she's a Bollywood star. So everybody's like, what are you? And she's gorgeous. And she's, you know, she has the media eating out of her hand, which is a bad thing because she's been painfully shy through her childhood. And she's one of those, she's almost agoraphobic. And then she has this. So there are reasons why that has happened. And that story is what reveals through the story. But when you meet her, there is a tendency for some readers to be, well, wah, wah, wah. Like, you have money, you have, you know, you have wealth, you have success, you have everything. Why the hell are you so sad? Right? And so it can irritate. And I was getting a little bit of that. So I have a one-page prologue, which is the moment and the day that they first meet, the hero and the heroine, you know, 20 years ago. And boom, it's, you know, it's lyrical, it's short, it's one conversation. And it ends with him saying, I'm Vikram, wanna be friends? And that's kind of it, you know, and you want them to be friends at the end of that story, yeah. Right? So it's just, so that, you know, that prologue took the book to a different level. So that is a flashback prologue. So there is, you know, there are, each story calls for something different. Mm-hmm. And if you believe, you know, sweeping rules, like flashbacks bad, then you stand to lose, you know, telling the best story. Or if you believe that backstory sin, then you're taking away from, you know, something that precious that you can give the reader. Mm-hmm. Well, so it's your story. It's your story, and you have to give it what the story needs.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I like what you said. And that's pretty much what I was saying, is that the reason I don't personally like flashbacks is because they're rarely done properly, but the way you're describing them, that's different, and they're done properly, and that probably would work very well. But we have to take a quick break and hear from our sponsor, and we'll be right back to wrap up our conversation. All right, so I know you guys have already heard me rant and rave and shout from the rooftops about my absolute favorite online writing tool for authors, One Stop for Writers. But I made a little boo-boo, okay, maybe it was a big boo-boo, last week, and I gave you the wrong discount code. Yay, me. So let's quickly talk about how One Stop for Writers can help you with your timeline, and then some. Then I'll give you the correct coupon code so you can check it out for yourselves. I have all my clients using One Stop, and I use it with every book I write. If that's not enough testimonial for you, then, well, I don't know what else to say. No, actually, I will say this. One Stop has this amazing feature that allows you to easily create a timeline, just like we've talked about so far on this episode. You can add it by scene or chapter, add descriptions of what happens in each. You can toggle between two different types of views, list view, and then their little cubes, I don't know what it's called. And even drag and drop the scenes around from one place to another if you find your timeline isn't quite working. Or let's say you decide that you like a certain scene better in an earlier part of the book. Easy. Just click on the block for that part of the timeline, drag and drop it wherever you want it to go now. Trust me, you guys, having some sort of timeline mapped out before you even begin writing, it's a game changer. And as I've told you before, when I started using my own brief chapter outline and then One Stop before I even sit down to write my stories, I have never had writer's block since. True story. Okay, sure, I've gotten stuck a couple times very briefly, but never more than a few hours or if that. Having a timeline laid out before you, even if you don't go into great detail for each chapter, will allow you to stay on a fluid timeline that's not only coherent, but easy for readers to follow. Check out the timeline tool and all the other amazing features that One Stop for Writers has to offer by going to their website. And you guessed it, it's onestopforwriters.com. After you're just totally blown away by how cool this platform is and why you never heard of it before, I mentioned it, I want you to go and sign up for their already super affordable subscription. I want you to enter the correct code for your 25% discount. I said 15 last week. Your 25% discount, which is Write Your Best 25, the number 25. That's Write Your Best 25 for 25% off your monthly or yearly subscription to One Stop for Writers. All right, now let's wrap up the discussion with Sonali Dave so I can give you my thoughts on this little issue of flashbacks before we close out for the week. Okay, we are back in the studio. We're talking with Sonali Dave, and we are going to wrap up our conversation on timelines. Unfortunately, we're running short on time, so I'm trying to see what we really need to talk about here. Let's do this. Why don't you tell me what you want to make sure my listeners know before we have to wrap up the conversation, and then we'll get some stuff about your books and all that.
Okay. Yeah, and it's not your fault. I talk a lot.
No, so it's been great. Like, I'm captivated. It's totally fine. I'm just sitting here going, uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, it's an advantage, to talk a lot when you write 500-page books.
You're fine.
Thank you. All right. So I think when we're talking about timelines specifically, I think the key there is what we were saying before, which is the dissemination of information. Mm-hmm. At that point, what is the bare minimum that you need to give a reader to keep them hungry and keep them dying to turn that page, right? So even if you know everything, and you've done all the research, our job is not to show off and tell them everything we know. Our job is to only give them enough to keep them engaged and turning the pages. So that is the true skill. At what point are you doing what? So, so dissemination. And when it comes to multi-timeline stories, then it becomes, there are these crossover points, right? So if you're writing A Distant Heart, where there is this entire childhood story, and there is this entire adulthood story in which they're running from gangsters, and this childhood story is from, this is the story of a girl who's stuck in, so if you remember The Bubble Boy, she is, she's basically been locked up for 12 years because she has aplastic anemia in a city like Mumbai, which, is probably the worst city to have aplastic anemia in because she has no immunity. So she's in this bubble. And so there's that entire timeline of when those 12 years she spends in a bubble. And today when she's out, she's being chased by this gangster. And her best friend from childhood is the cop who's protecting her. So you have this really compressed chase going on, and then this 10 years long thing, and you're going back and forth between them. So they can run parallel, but you can't have them run parallel. You have to have, as a reader, as I'm getting through the childhood part, it has to have a direct impact on my adulthood part, right? On the current story. So those crosses, when you're writing a timeline story, are really what is crucial, right? If I'm telling you about this conversation between them doing their homework together, then that has to drive something today when they're on the run, right? So it's those crossover points, which have to be turning points in some way. That's when those timelines cross. And again, don't be afraid, just write it all down. And you can even, you can write the entire backstory, especially when there's such parallel timeline stories. You can write the whole thing down. It is a mess at the end of it, and you will pull your hair out. Mm-hmm. But once it's down there, the story tells you. Mm-hmm. You might have to kind of, and it tells you if you wrote something that has no place in the story. Or it tells you what you need to do to it to make it connect with current story. So I think the main thing with timelines to think about is, what are your points of crossover? What are your points of reference to current story? So it is those are the the crossover points is what's, I think, really important to know.
That's really, I like that you said that, because I had just not even considered that myself. I've never attempted that. in my writing, so I'm a little nervous to do it, but I love that piece of advice that it makes sense. If you're going to in a previous chapter or flashbacky chapter, talk about the childhood, if you can make it relate to what is going on currently in their story, it does tie it together very, very nicely. And that's a very good piece of advice. It's a good note to end on. So I wish we had more time, but we don't. But I do want to give you a few more minutes because I want to give you a chance to tell us how we can find your books, how we can follow you on social media, reach out to you, newsletter, all that good stuff, whatever you want us to know.
All right. Thank you. It's been fabulous being here. So thanks so much for having me. And I am at sonalidev.com, and everything, all my social media contacts are on there. I am very active on Instagram. I do a lot of my July arcs. So I do giveaways twice a month with other really anticipated novels. So there's a lot of fun stuff going on with Instagram. I'm on Facebook a lot. I'm on Twitter, but I'm useless on Twitter. But, you know, if you want to follow me, you can. And I have a newsletter, which you can sign up at on my website. And if you are into, so another a thing that's a recurring theme in my books is food. As in my life, I perpetuate
that.
So you get a free e-booklet download when you sign up for my newsletter. And, I barely once a month, and it's this thing where I have the 3 R's, which is I do a recipe in every newsletter. I do a recommendation, and I do a really bad joke that my family sends me on family group chat. And I thought I should share the love. And so that's my newsletter, Instagram, Facebook, and go to sonalidev.com. My books are available everywhere books are sold, but support your local indie always.
Yeah, thank you. I love when people say that. That's very nice. I appreciate that. That's really good.
Oh, and you can get signed copies of my books. I mean, this is on my website too. Yeah. You can get signed copies and personalized copies of my books.
That's my podcast, people. I'm going to get one and add it to my shelf.
That's awesome. So Anderson's, and which is in Naperville, and Love Sweet Arrow both have signed books. It's all on my website. So yeah, keep in touch. I love that.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, and I will stay in touch. And I've already sent you friend requests. So you guys be sure to find Sonali and get her newsletter and all those things. And the links will be in, the link to her website will be in our show notes. So it'll be easy to find, but don't do it while you're driving. Wait till you get home.
Yes,
okay.
Please.
Thanks, Sonali. I will talk to you soon.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Okay. So it's completely my fault that this episode kind of ran long and only features a few questions with Sonali. I try anyway to prepare each author and each guest host for what to expect and how to limit our interview, but sometimes we all get passionate about a certain topic, and especially when we're talking about our own book. So I totally get it. We go on and on and on, and God knows I am very guilty of doing this myself. So no judgment at all. But I do want to touch briefly on this issue of flashbacks. What I was trying to kind of relay to Sonali was that I personally don't like them as a reader, period. Like, you're not going to convince me that they're required. But the reason I don't like them is that most times, even established authors just don't handle them properly. And they wind up confusing the heck out of me and other readers. I personally don't like it if I can't easily tell what's happening and when. For example, great example, there was a book that was so popular about 10 years ago called Life After Life by Kate Acheson. And maybe some of you all read it and loved it, but I gave it the old college effort because it sounded really intriguing. The cover was beautiful and everyone, I think even Oprah, was raving about this book. But I don't think I made it near halfway through before I gave up and it wound up in a yard sale. The idea was so interesting, and I really, really wanted to love this book. But for me, wonky timelines are not my cup of tea. Now, when it comes to flashbacks, another reason I don't like them is because, despite what Sonali feels, I respectfully disagree. I don't think, and you'll never convince me, that it's necessary to have a flashback ever. A much easier method for allowing your reader to follow along, especially if you're featuring more than one POV and dueling timelines, is to sprinkle, that means, you know, drop in there little hints and clues about the character's past and backstory throughout the story, rather than dumping it on the reader in just a flashback. Doing it this way also lends an element of mystery to the story. And even in a contemporary romance, one little element of mystery is going to hook the reader. It gives the reader a reason to, quote, stay tuned so that they eventually can find out what happened in this backstory. I'll end it by saying this. If you insist on using flashbacks and you agree with Sonali and you truly think there's no other way to do it, I do agree that, as Sonali said, they need to be kept very short, like less than a page. Also, I wanted to tell you that you need to put the entire scene in italics. This is an instant trigger, letting the reader know this is a flashback without you telling them this is a flashback. And make sure that the final sentence before the flashback lets us know we're about to be given one, and the sentence right after grounds the reader back to the current timeline. But again, in my professional opinion, based on 15 years of writing experience and over 10, almost 12 years of experience working for publishing companies, working for literary agents, being an editor, being a coach, being a writing instructor, it is still my sincere belief and my recommendation that you avoid flashbacks until and unless you just really feel like you have no other choice but to use them. And even then, only once you've practiced your craft and you feel comfortable and you do this after, but not your first book. That's all I'm going to say about that, as Forrest Gump used to say. So I hope you enjoy your weekend and your week. We'll be back next week with another great episode and another discussion with a best-selling author. And in the meantime, go write your best book. This is what you've been waiting for. What is